to take extensive testing on the radio.
Well, transcriber, my name is Eric Elliott, and I am with the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. And today is January the 16th in the year 2002. Time is marching on, but I'm here on a beautiful sunny afternoon in Greensboro, North Carolina, at the home of Adelaide Murphy. Ms. Murphy, thank you so much for sitting down with us to talk about your service in the Women's Reserve of the United States Marine Corps during World War II. And I want to start with you with the same simple question that I ask most folks, and that is simply, where were you born? Where'd you grow up?
I was born and bred in Boston, Massachusetts, until I joined the Marines.
Did you ever travel much outside of Massachusetts area when you were growing up?
Yes, I had been on a cruise to Cuba and Spain. That's about it.
It's pretty good, though.
The Bahamas.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell me about your folks. What did they do?
My mother, before she was married, was a school teacher. She was from Providence, Rhode Island. My father was from Connecticut, and he was in the automotive supply business.
Okay. How about brothers and sisters?
Both of my brothers graduated from Brown University. And after graduation, one of them joined the Royal Canadian Air Force. And then the other one, after graduation, went into the Navy and was a pilot.
So were you, they were both older than you?
Yes.
Schools in North Carolina were a little bit slower than the folks up north. When you graduated from, where'd you graduate from high school, by the way?
Graduated from Notre Dame Academy.
Was that 11 years or 12 years? But then what year did you graduate from school?
Oh, gosh. I've forgotten.
36? 37, more than that, then 37?
Around that, because I spent 2 years at Girls Latin School and finished the rest of my high school at Notre Dame. That would have been 38 or 39,
Okay. Were you somebody who liked school?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a favorite subject?
I guess English.
Did you know sometime in high school, did you have an inkling about what it is you wanted to be when you grew up?
A teacher.
Did you? Had your, any...
That's when I went to Lesley College, and that's a teacher training college.
Which is right nearby there in Cambridge.
In Cambridge, yeah.
So I guess your mom was an influence on you there. Had your dad been in the service?
No, he wasn't. He was married and had children during the First World War.
Right. You were at Lesley for 2 years, and while you were there, Pearl Harbor happened. Do you remember Pearl Harbor Day?
Oh, definitely.
Tell me about that. Where were you? What? How did you hear about
it? I was at home in my bedroom at my desk studying on Sunday afternoon when I heard it on the radio.
What was the mood like in your house?
It was shocking.
Had your brothers already joined the service?
No. But as soon as they graduated from college, they did.
You finished those 2 years at Lesley in the spring of 42, I guess. Were you living at home when you were going to Lesley?
I was living at home.
Right.
I was teaching at Choate School in Brookline when I decided to leave and go into the Marines. So that would have been 42.
Right. You were telling me before we got started that you did not originally join the Marines. Tell me what you originally joined and why.
I waited. I did not want to go in the wax. I did not want to go in the waves. And I didn't think the Marine Corps was ever going to come out with women again. Of course, they had women in World War I, but they were the last ones to come out
right.
with women. So I decided to join the SPARS, the Coast Guard. And I think it was less than 2 weeks after I had signed up that the Marines announced that they were going to have women's reserve. And it was interesting, President Roosevelt, FDR, delayed it. He wanted the women going into the Marines to be called Marines and not by a fictitious name.
What did your folks feel about you joining the service?
Well, they encouraged it, if that was what I wanted.
Right. Now, you had to be a certain age. Did they have to decide for you to join the Marines?
What age was I? I was born in 21.
So you just turned 21 that year.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Right. What about your brothers? They were already in. Were they in service by that time? 42? Were they?
Yes, they were both in.
So how did big brothers feel about their sister joining the service?
Well, they were kind of proud.
That meant they were three stars at home. Your folks' home.
Yeah, they sure did.
Yeah. Did any of your other friends that you had in that area, any of your other girlfriends, join the service?
No. Most of my girlfriends were either married with their husbands in service, or they just weren't interested in going into the service. So it was my decision. Nobody talked me into it.
When you signed up, did they have, you told me you were the 11th? The 11th on the list.
I was told.
In the first group who joined in Massachusetts.
Right.
Did they have a sense of the kinds of work that you all could do? Did they give you a choice of what would you like to do in the service?
Oh, yes.
What did you tell them?
I told them that I was interested in working in aviation. And I think I was influenced by both of my brothers, because they were both pilots.
Had you ever gone up in a plane with them?
No.
But it was an exciting thing to be around at those times there. Now, when you joined, the Marines did not have a separate training facility as of yet, so you ended up taking basic at a place called Hunter College in the Bronx, mm-hmm. New York. Tell me about your Hunter experience.
We had thorough training in several different fields, but it wasn't a typical boot camp. And the only time we were allowed to leave the boot camp at the college was on Easter Sunday, and we could go in a group to New York City, and we were allowed to go to whatever church we belonged to. But we had to march in the Easter parade and stay together as a group, Waves and Marines.
Were most of your instructors men or women at basic?
There were very few Marine officers, and I think almost all of them, of the original ones, had been in the Navy and were Navy officers.
So they'd taken women naval officers and made them Marine officers.
Yeah.
At the beginning, if everybody started scratch, you've got to have people have to be made something in a sense, the supervisor position. What was the most difficult thing about basic training for you? You weren't used to sharing a room with 40 people or whatever the amount was. How many were in your accommodations?
I think we had about 8 girls to a room because we had double-decker bunks. And it was different because I had never been away to live before that time. But it was challenging and pleasant.
Yeah. Was the physical stuff difficult for you?
No, but we didn't have a great deal of physical exercise because of the location of Hunter College, for one thing.
Right.
But there was a field, and we used to have to go every morning for exercises.
So a lot of drill, but not beyond that a lot. How long were you there? About 2 months altogether?
Wait a minute. Let me see when I went to Atlanta. I haven't got it down. I think I was only at boot camp for what was less than 2 months.
At boot camp, did they...
And I had to take studies in radio and a lot of mechanical testing.
I was going to say, did you take those kind of tests there at Hunter?
Yes. We studied and then took the test there. And that's when, believe it or not, I showed up to be mechanically adept. And my radio voice was a lot better than it is today. And there were certain qualifications that allowed me to go to Link Training School.
Right. Had they mentioned that as an option beforehand, or was that something you had learned about simply by going to that? You had never heard of Link Training before going into the schools?
No.
Right. And that's a simulator for training pilots in navigation, I guess.
It trains them for blind flying.
Yeah.
It's a simulator, and they have different kinds of links. And I eventually got into radar links and more complicated trainers.
You were telling me that after your time in Hunter, you went down to Atlanta.
That was a naval base.
At the naval base. And that was for your specialty training in the Link. Was that just women being trained to do that, or were there men and women instructors?
No, there were... there were men and women instructors, but it was just for women.
Okay. I know one of the
Because we eventually replaced men so they could go to fight.
Yeah, that was one of the phrases that they used a lot in advertising at that time, mm-hmm. was to free a man to fight. Was that one of the reasons that you decided to join the service, as opposed to collecting scrap and growing a victory garden, that kind of thing? You thought you could do more than that.
Then. Right.
Yeah. Some of the women, I guess, who are related to the men who were freed to fight, didn't always look too kindly on those who were in service. Did you ever get any static from anybody outside of the service about being in the Women's Reserve?
No, I can't remember any.
Yeah. You were in Atlanta for how long before you went to Cherry Point?
Let's see.
Not as long as you were at Hunter, or longer?
It was longer than when I was at Hunter. It had to be about 2 months.
2 months. And then after you had this Lidus training, you went to Cherry Point, North Carolina. Tell me what Cherry Point looks like in 1943. You probably never heard of it before you got there, had
you? No. I had never been to North Carolina. It was out in the boondocks. But not as much as Bogue was. Because it is a big, big base now.
Right.
But it was big back then.
So how many women were down there when you were there?
Oh, when I was there, they had women Marines probably 80 to 100, and three times that many
men.
Let's see. No, it's Cherry Point. I'm mixed up. I would say there was less than 100, though.
Okay. Describe, if you could, for us, just a typical day of being a link trainer. What's your schedule like? When do you get up? What do you do during the day?
Well, we used to muster in March. We'd have to hit the deck at 4 a.m. And we had calisthenics, and at first we had men instructors, and they were typical Marine platoon people. Like, they gave us exercises that later on had to be stopped, because they would, I'll never forget one drill instructor. He'd get up and he'd say, "Beat them guts." Well, that isn't good for a woman's structure.
Right.
So they had to change the exercise program for women. But we would drill, and then we would go to work by about 8.
About how many, the instruction is a combination of your part classroom teacher and part one-on-one instructor with the pilot, or what? How does the instruction process go for a link train?
Well, we got a lot of that at Lidus. Mm-hmm. And
but your job is simply to work with the machine, with the pilots, and test the skills?
Well, we had to know how to set the trainer up properly. Mm-hmm. And we had to maintain the trainer mechanically. And of course, every pilot, military or with the airlines for many, many years, that was part of their job, to take so many hours a month in a link trainer. Right. And we mapped out a program of the flight that the trainer would be taking, just like it, like a plane in the air would take. And we would record this on a frog that was on our desk. And we had to log them all in, and these were sent to their commanding officers, I guess, to see how they did. But you regulate the height of the trainer, just like you would regulate the height of a, with the instruments.
Right.
Of an airplane, and you go into battle, and you shoot your guns, and we could tell them when they were going in a wrong direction, I'll say, or didn't have the right altitude.
You know, I listening to you describe the details, it sounds, nowadays, my son's video games are very, they basically are replicating what it likes to, does like to fly. Mm-hmm. This was before, was there much of what we would call computers involved in the machinery, or was it more mechanical than electronic?
It was both, but I think it was more mechanical. Mm-hmm. And a lot of pilots had a hard time getting their trainer adjusted. They said it's easier when you did it in an airplane.
So the feel wasn't exactly one-to-one. The pilots would tell you that the trainer didn't quite simulate the flying experience.
And usually they hadn't started out right.
Yeah, if you start at 8 o'clock, are you working with the same pilot all day long, or is it like take an hour for the pilot to do the test and then the next pilot comes?
They have to take so many hours per month in a link. And it was broken into several sessions.
So when you're at Cherry Point, you're
there.
But
I might have had 4, 5, or 6 different people
coming in that day.
Coming in a day's time, yeah. Right.
So everybody who was assigned to regular duty at Cherry Point, to be stationed there to fly out to do coast patrols or whatever they were doing, would come back in on a regular basis to get this, and that's why they had to. How many link trainer personnel like you, how many women were in that job? Were all 80 of these women at Cherry Point link trainers, or were they doing other work?
No.
So altogether, about how many were operators were there?
About 10, I think, to begin with.
Okay. Did that number go up during the war?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we had to schedule. For example, when I was sent to Bogue, I was in charge of the link department. And we had shifts because the planes were going up night and day in training. So we had to be available sometimes in the day and sometimes at night.
I was going to ask you, so it's not a 9-to-5 job, but because,
no.
Because the pilots are on wartime hours. You all have to, do you work, is it a 7-day work week, or do you get a Sunday or weekend off?
It was a 7-day work week,
yeah.
And we also had women in the control, what do you call it, the control tower.
Right.
Down at Bogue, and they trained up at Cherry Point beginning.
When you first started this work, I guess they did not have, were not actively using radar like they were later in the war.
No, we went into radar links down in NAS Vero Beach.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And we had some training in the low pressure chamber and different things pertaining to aviation.
So did you ever test pilots at any of these other devices, or did you pretty much stay just with the link training?
I stayed with links, mainly.
You were telling me before we got started that you were offered the chance to go to OCS, but mm-hmm. liked link training so much you didn't want to jeopardize being out of it.
Well, it wasn't that. It was just that if I went to OCS, they could not assure me that I could get back into link when I passed and, you know, became an officer. So I said, well, I'll just stick with it.
I've talked with some people, maybe you can tell me if this was just big talk, but several people have told me that they preferred being enlisted to officers because enlisted folks had the more interesting jobs. Officers was too much into personnel matters and too...
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. That... What was the, you were at...
Now, I didn't want to have a job sitting behind a desk.
Right.
Recruiting or something like that. Right. I liked what I was doing and I knew that it was a necessity. Yeah.
You were at Cherry Point for how long and then moved to Bogue?
Cherry Point...
You must have gotten Cherry Point sometime in around the late summer or fall of 43, if you were in Hunter on Easter Sunday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Were you in...
I was there, several months.
Okay. Bogue is a satellite, of Cherry Point.
Bogue is an outlying
field
of Cherry Point, yeah.
If Cherry Point was the boondocks, Bogue is beyond the moon, isn't it?
It was the boondocks. It was right on Bogue Sound. It was right back on
the you near the light? I'm trying to think.
It's located between Swansboro and Atlantic Beach.
Okay. Housing-wise, did they have an own separate housing down there? Did you have to physically move? Or were you just basically doing a long commute?
Well, let me tell you something funny. I went to Bogue from Cherry Point in charge of 5 other women. We were the first ones on Bogue at that base. and the men definitely were not prepared for us. And one night, when we were first there, I guess we had been there maybe a week, about 3 o'clock in the morning, a male Marine came into the dorm that we had taken over, because he had been on leave, he didn't know the wound was there, and he went to get in his bunk. It was funny.
They've changed the whole service on him while he's gone. I could imagine that you all turned heads for several of those folks who had only heard tales of women Marines but never actually seen them in the flesh till you got there.
That's funny.
Well, now, you were in charge of five other women at Bogue. Were you doing link training for those people who were flying out of Bogue? Is that what it was?
There were three squadrons down there when I went there. SBDs and SB2Cs and F6Fs. We worked with all the squadrons that were there.
That's not, I guess, around the corner at, what was the beach that was so destroyed in Hurricane Fran? There was a missile testing.
That was Oak Island.
Okay.
No, it's not. That's near Long Beach.
Right. Well, Oak Island is down. Pender County is what I'm thinking of, and it'll come to me in a minute. But I know, all along there, there's flying facilities. There's Camp Davis, which is not too far down the coast, mm-hmm. where the Wasp were towing planes. So there's a whole lot of traffic in the air.
Yeah.
On the North Carolina coast.
Right.
Did you all ever? I know there were German subs that were patrolling not too far offshore. What was the day-to-day conditions like? Was it blackout conditions for you all?
To a degree, but it wasn't. We weren't scared of anything.
Okay. Were most of the women that you were serving with just as fresh a recruit as you were at 21, or were a fair number of the women older?
There were, that I knew of, very few that were much older, but there were some.
How long were you at Bogue before you went to Vero Beach?
Quite a while. I bet it was.
So were you at Bogue during when D-Day happened?
No, I was in Vero Beach, okay. D-Day.
So that would have been sometime before June of 44.
I have an answering machine.
You were in charge of people at Bogue. I assume that made you get a promotion. Did it?
Yes. I was a... what was I then? I was a sergeant, I think.
Did it... what was the responsibility of being a supervisor like?
Well, I had to make sure that... that they knew all the restrictions on the base, the girls did.
Right.
And there were a few other Marine women there, but they weren't in link. They were in the control tower and a few in administration.
Knew the restrictions. I've had not a few people tell me about social life. What was social life like down there? Now, there's not a lot going on in Bogue Field, but I imagine if you go into Jacksonville or someplace, there must be some social life going on.
Oh, yeah. But we had, this is funny, we had on the base what they called a slop chute. That was where you could go when you weren't working, if you wanted to have a beer after you got off of work or something like that. Then there was an NCO club on the base, and of course an officers club. But we were not supposed to mingle with the officers.
Did the women sort of pal around together, or were everybody sort of breaking off and doing their own social thing?
Well, we got to go into town, and there was a... In Swansboro, they had a club for the... military. And we had chances to go into Atlantic Beach and go in the area. We had time off.
Did anybody have a car, or did you have to?
Now, you were not allowed to have your own car, but I had a license to drive a Jeep, but I couldn't take that on Liberty.
Right.
That was just for use in the...
To go between the far hinterland and back to the
headquarters, to the link room and all that.
Right.
It was pretty rough living, actually.
Yeah.
But very friendly.
Did you ever get a chance to go home back to Boston during your time in service? Or were you pretty much stuck out of the
I had a place? Liberty one time that I went back to Boston. Yeah. And I had to take a train. And it was so crowded, I'd stand between the cars, and I swore I'd never do it again.
Yeah. Are you learning to fly? Have you gotten a chance to fly while you're down there with these folks?
I had a couple of opportunities to get behind the flying. But that was just up and down the coast, and I have never applied for a license or anything.
Right.
No.
But you did get to go up in a plane after teaching everybody how to do it.
Well, I used to have to take the newer link girls in an airplane to listen to the radio.
So they know what the experience
know
was like
really
to hear a radio over the sound of the engine and everything else that's going on.
Even though you had a radio for your link and everything, but there was a difference, of course.
Right.
But when I went to NAS in Vero, we went into specialized links, radar, and I forget what the others, but they were different than the links that I started out in.
Were the kinds of planes that you were training for different, I guess, too, at Vero as a result?
Well, now down at Vero, we had bigwigs there quite frequently. They came down from Canada, and they were from Spain and here and there to see the Lynx.
Right.
And we had to explain, another girl and I, because we worked in twos on radar trainers, and we had to explain what all the instruments were and what how they related to the airplane.
So you were doing the showcase for all the VIPs coming through. This is how it works.
And after you have that off, I'll tell you something funny.
Well, now, if you had these folks from other countries, were you training pilots from other countries?
No.
Because I know I've talked to some people who did train people from other countries. In fact, there was a group of Dutch Marines that were down at Lejeune sometime in 44 or 45. That must have come just after you left. You probably got to Vero.
Excuse me. I knew my daughter wasn't feeling good today.
Yeah.
She's leaving work.
Well, now, you were at Vero sometime before June of 44. Did the pace of things change after D-Day? Did the work... What do you remember hearing about D-Day? Do you remember anything?
Oh, yeah. Everybody went out for a big party. Yes, our schedules changed because they started discharging people rather rapidly.
Because the tide was definitely turning as we were advancing in the front.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of planes were flying out of Vero?
F-16s. They were night fighters.
Okay.
That was a night fighter base. I can't remember, but they were more complicated.
Which is why you had to have the radar instrument flying opposed to the to the other. So you went down and basically got additional training at Vero Beach and then helped train other people on these new machines, as well as showing them off to folks. If you had 80 to 100 women at Cherry Point, and a hearty half dozen at Bogue. How many were at Vero? How many women were you?
Well, there were mostly waves.
Okay.
At Vero.
Because it was an
I would say we, the Marines, were a third of the number of the waves. Because the waves were in administration and it was a naval base.
Right.
And we were just there for Marine detachments.
And you tell me there were two detachments down at Vero Beach when you were there?
No, I think I told you that at Bogue.
Okay.
At Bogue, yeah.
That's right, two at Bogue.
Bogue was small and couldn't accommodate more than two or three squadrons.
The day-to-day routine, you're still training even a different machine, but you're still training about six folks a day to work through a machine. Is the process a little bit slower with a more sophisticated machine?
When we were on day and night duty, we'd have at least 10.
Okay.
And we had to keep a log on each pilot. And we had colonels down to ensigns.
Yeah, regardless of rank, you had to have your hours in.
Yeah.
I guess it was April of 1945 when President Roosevelt passed away. You remember that day?
Oh, yes, I do. I think it was April.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, though.
Right, it was right before the end of the war.
Yeah.
What was the base like when that happened?
Well, I think everybody was upset to a degree.
You were young, and one of the things that's interesting to talk about people is that it takes a lot to get the attention of a teenager, early 20s person into world events, and World War II got everybody's attention.
Mm-hmm.
Were you following politics much during, and what was going on in the course of the war as things were going on, or were you dealing pretty much with just the day-to-day details of the job?
Well, I followed it a bit, but not as much as I do these days.
Were you in communication regularly with your two brothers who were in service?
Not regularly. Just one was in the European theater, and the other was in the Pacific theater. Mm. And I didn't see both of them until late November, when they happened to be able to come to Boston to my wedding.
That's great. So you got married in November of 45?
Yeah.
That's right. You were telling me before we started this that you met Julian, your future spouse, at Vero.
Right.
Did you meet him late 44 when you got there, or was it a little bit later in 45?
Let's see, I was married in November. I got out. I think I had known him for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm. And he was night?
He was an instructor, night fighter instructor.
So he's, you had probably had similar work experiences to talk about then, yeah. I guess.
And he used to make many flights up to Jacksonville to take people who were, so they could train listening to the radio and all that. But I never went with him.
Did he have his pilot's license himself?
Yeah, he had a commercial license before he joined the Navy. He's from Asheville.
Okay, so that might explain how you got back to North Carolina then. There's some
family
ties.
Right.
Well, when I ask people to think back to those days, is there a particular, you fell in love, that's one of the things that happened as a result of your service.
Yeah.
Is there a particular song or movie from those times that when you hear or see takes you back?
Quite a few, yeah.
What are some of those that do that for you?
Well, when I watch movies today that pertaining to the war, World War II, I find it very interesting. I had Tyrone Power in my leg one time. And there were celebrities that we would meet.
But he joined just as a regular serviceman. He didn't have, he wasn't doing a USO tour when he showed up in your leg trainer.
No, he wasn't doing the USO. No. And
so did you get his autograph?
No. And one of the entertainments we had on the base at, where was it? Vero, was Frank Sinatra when he was in his glory.
Right.
When he was young, too. Gosh.
Was that a USO tour that came through then? That the...
No, he was the star of a show.
Okay.
And they came to the base. They went to different bases.
Right.
And who was the man that he used to? He was funny. He's one of his pals. I can't remember.
Well, he went through several series
Jerry
of pals.
Somebody.
Well, I know there was Jerry Colonna who worked, hung out with, was that
That's
who it was?
His name.
Jerry
yeah.
Colonna?
Yeah. Okay. He's a comedian.
Right.
He was with him.
Yeah.
They had entertainment at most bases, one degree or another.
Right. I was going to say, Frank's probably not going to show up at Bogue's, so you're glad you went to Vero Beach. VE Day. Any special remembrances about the day that ended the war in Europe? Or either VJ Day?
I went to a big party that night at a private home right down the beach. We lived in what was a Holiday Inn right on the beach in Vero Beach. That was the Waves and the Marines Barracks. We didn't live on the base. And
nice location.
Oh yeah, it was wonderful. When we had time off, we would be lying out on the beach enjoying it. Yeah. And there was a lot of social... The people who lived in the area on the beach were always having socials and invited us. It was nice.
When you were off base, I guess, did you have to keep your uniform on? Were you supposed to wear your uniform
yes,
all the time?
Always.
I think for a lot of people, though, that uniform was a ticket to a lot of goodwill because people would invite them to things just by seeing that they were in the service.
Yeah. And when we had, when I graduated from Lytis in Atlanta, there was a very nice couple that sent their chauffeur to pick us up anytime we wanted to go into Atlanta. And they were very, very good. And they took us out to a lake close by Atlanta. And
yeah.
They were very nice to us.
When did you and Julian decide to get married?
Well, he wanted to get married in Florida at Vero Beach, but I decided I wanted to get back to Boston.
Right. Right.
So we were married in Boston.
A lot of people I know actually leave the service after being married. That's the reason they leave, or they get pregnant and leave the service. But you both had to wait, I guess, to your the end of the war when the process down.
I was discharged before he was.
Okay.
And in fact, he wasn't discharged until after we were married. And I went back to Vero Beach with him till he got discharged.
Did you have the option to stay in longer if you wanted to? I mean,
oh, yes. Yeah.
Some of the services didn't really offer that. They pretty much wanted everybody to go back. But
right.
I guess you had built up some skills that they wanted to keep.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I had the opportunity, but I preferred to go home and get prepared to get married.
Right. What did each of you all do after your time in service? What kind of careers did you have?
Well, we lived in Vero for a while. And I didn't work anywhere then. But we moved to Asheville, which was his home. And he had been with Cone Mills before he went in the Navy. And he still had his job in Asheville at the mill. He was a superintendent. And I went to business school in Asheville before I became pregnant. My first child was born in Asheville. And then we moved down here to Greensboro.
So how long have you all been here in Greensboro?
That was in 1947. Right in this same house.
That's great. When I was coming in today on the Bryan Expressway, just knowing just about 20 or so years association with this area, a lot of things have changed, but this is a nice area that hasn't.
And he went into business with his brother. They were both in textiles.
Did any of your children ever join the military or express an interest in joining?
No. I don't think my son would stand a chance because he's been an asthmatic all his life. But my girls have never expressed a desire.
They let women do so many more things now than they did. I mean, we just had, Lord knows what they're doing. We were saying this before the tape. I was asking if women should be allowed to serve in combat. You said you had some reservations on that.
I think if a woman is an experienced pilot or experienced, I can't think of any other position that I'd like to see a woman in.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to see a woman go out for ground fire or anything like that. But I'm not opposed to women aviators.
Okay.
And we have quite a few of them.
Yeah. What's the thing you think that your time in the service, how did it change you the most?
Well, it introduced me to a lot of people who were from different parts of the United States, which I found interesting. And there were about six of us that did duty together, most of it at Vero Beach, and we still are in touch with one another.
That's great.
And we see one another when we can.
Had you ever had grits before coming south?
Yes, my mother loved the, hominy is what she liked. We didn't have the regular grits, but I never had them before I was in North Carolina.
Yes, it's a different experience. I went north and experienced scrapple in Philadelphia. I had the same sensation.
Yeah, my mother was from Rhode Island. She was used to the hominy.
Right.
But I never ate that.
Some people have said that service made them more independent. Do you think that's what happened to you?
I think in many ways it did. And it made me decide that I did not want to go back in teaching. Now, I have done substitute teaching at my church school, but these days, I wouldn't want to be teaching school.
If you were just a teacher, it'd be one thing, but you have to be a lot of other roles these days.
That's true.
Did you ever do anything in your service experience that got you scared? What was the scariest thing you ever did?
I think the scariest thing was I was up with a pilot in a plane. And I didn't trust the way he operated. And it, when I get on a flight, not right now, but back when we used to travel some, it was interesting to me, but it also scared me because I knew what the pilot should be doing.
I guess that's pretty frightening to think about it. You're double checking. It's like you're having to be a mom to every pilot on the service.
I used to say a prayer that he'd taken lots of like. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's frightening these days.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for pilots these days.
It's certainly things have changed since the last few months.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
you know, since the last few months, we have gotten, gosh, I've seen more flags the last, you have a beautiful one out today. But, you know, it is, people don't take our country for granted, I don't think. But do you think we were more patriotic back during the war? Or how was the mood of the country different?
I think we were very patriotic after Pearl Harbor. Yeah.
Did you ever worry that we might not win the war?
Back during World War II?
Mm-hmm.
No, I had faith that we would. But I'm afraid this war that we're in now, it's going to be here for the rest of our lives. Because terrorists are everywhere.
Yeah. It's a harder one to fight when there's not a clear battlefield, isn't it?
I used to talk to my brother who was a naval aviator, and he ended up being he stayed in the reserves, and he ended up being a captain, and he was head of a squadron out of Weymouth, Massachusetts for years, and I admired him for staying in the reserves. But now my husband wanted to stay in the reserves too. But as a child, he had been hit in one eye with from a BB gun.
Mm-hmm.
And as he got older, that affected his sight. And he couldn't pass the physical. Because he used to go up to Norfolk once a month to fly
on
the reserves.
Yeah.
Because I had three children and I didn't consider anything.
Right.
I didn't take care of them.
Well, you were talking about you keep up with half a dozen folks that you were in service with. You meet all different kinds from all different backgrounds. Is there a particular funny story either about yourself in dealing with those folks or about them that you might share with us?
When you have that cut off, I will.
Okay, what we'll go back to for off the record. You don't have any off the record stories.
Well, we stayed such close buddies for so many years.
Yeah.
And people from the West Coast and from mid-United States, they seem to have a different outlook on a lot of things than Easterners do.
That's true.
And, of course, people say to me, oh, you're just a damn Yankee because you're from Boston. Oh, man.
If a young woman came to you today, the service has changed a lot, but still, you went through the discipline, the structure. Mm-hmm. If a woman came to you today and said, maybe she's 17, said, I'm thinking about joining the military, what would your sage advice be to her?
Well, first I'd advise her to join the Marines rather than another branch. And to take advantage of the education that you can take. And I think it would depend on what sort of interest the girl had had before she thought about going in the service. But a lot of parents are dead set against girls going in.
Do you think you had I'm sure hear misconceptions that people have about folks in the service. Mm-hmm. What do you think the biggest misconception is for people who, my generation, comparatively few folks, had the service experience? You volunteered to join. There wasn't a mandatory draft. Folks didn't have that required service. What do you think people who are not in the military don't understand about military folks?
Well, are you talking about men or women?
Either. And both.
Both. I think that most people have greater respect for young people joining the military than they did years ago. I think it's more prevalent today.
You think that's in part due to what the different kinds of work they can do in the military now?
Mm-hmm. And I think it's wonderful that if you served so many years and what have you, that the government helps people to get a good education, which they might not be able to do if they didn't have their military background.
My father-in-law was in the Marines stationed at Cherry Point and then El Toro.
Oh, really?
And he was Semper Fi to the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Did the women Marines, they were always Semper Fi as well? Did they have their own special phrase?
Or? I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say something. Forget. Well, and speaking of education, any young man who has been in service, particularly men, as a youngster, like in the Navy, I think that it's wonderful that they have the opportunity to get a good education.
Yeah.
And should take advantage of it.
If you had to
I don't know what it'll be like after this war, but
Right. If you had to, of course, none of us can do it, do our lives over again, but if you had to do this part of your life over again, would you have done it?
Yes. Because it was an awakening to me, and it was something so different from the way I had been living.
When you were in, I guess they did not allow women Marines overseas, did they?
No. But I did have the opportunity to go, and it would have been overseas, to Hawaii. And the reason I didn't, that a member of my family was dying. And I thought, oh, I can't be that far away from home. That was before Hawaii and Alaska became states.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
So that would have been overseas.
Well, I'm anxious to hear this off-the-record story, so let me ask you, is there anything about, it's terribly unfair to come in and say, tell me in an hour the most important things about your life over the last 50 years, but anything else that you'd like to share with us about either your time in service or how that's affected you since then?
Well, I'm still very proud of the time I spent in the service because I know that I did help men be able to fulfill their desires to go and fight.
You were telling me before that you had donated a uniform which found its way to the Women in Military Service Memorial up in Arlington this last year. And another, I guess it's down at the Greensboro Museum as well.
I'm told it is, yeah.
Do you still Do you stay active in the Women Marines Association?
Oh, yeah. But we've never had a chapter in this area. Right. I knew just one other person in Greensboro itself. She's been dead quite a while now. That was in the Marines. She was in recruitment on the West Coast. And I did not want to be in a job where I was sitting behind a desk.
Well, if you get to see Tyrone Power and experience the scenic beauty of Bug Field, I guess you've had a full military experience. You got all the glamour right there that you are.
I wanted to go. I was down at Emerald Isle last summer with my daughter and her family. And I wanted to go out to Bogue and see if I could just go on the base and ride around. Because when I was there, Swansboro was all dirt roads. Bogue Field was dirt. There wasn't even any grass. But I didn't get the opportunity to.
The area has changed so much, yeah.
Oh, man. No, those were good times. They were educational and educationally for, you know, person.
Right. Right.
And I was glad that I had served the time I did.
Well, on behalf of the school and myself, thank you for doing this this afternoon. We certainly appreciate your nearly 3 years of service there.
You're nice to want to listen to my sketchy.
I would imagine you trained not a few pilots over the course of those 3 years almost. So there's probably not a few folks who, looking back, probably appreciate the fact that you helped get them through a day's battle. So. Thank you. And thank you, transcriber, wherever in California or wherever you may be today.